Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly? Oh, permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Good, have a good day. We appreciate you being with us. We're happy to be here every single weekday morning, 6 until 10 Eastern Time, 3 until 7 Pacific, on the ever-expanding CBS Sports Radio Network. And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. How we doing, everybody? Thanks so much for joining us. Coming your way in 20 minutes, Kyle Petty's going to join us. He's the author of a new book called Swerve or Die, his life in stock car racing and NASCAR. We'll talk to Kyle Petty coming up in 20, in 40. NFL held its Hall of Fame induction weekend. We'll talk about the best moments from induction weekend. But what's going on in Los Angeles is significant. Of course, the Rams are defending Super Bowl champions, and Aaron Donald's the best player on the team, but Matthew Stafford might be the most important player simply because there is no replacement for a starting quarterback of that caliber. While Matthew Stafford's not one of the top three or four best quarterbacks in football, obviously is a crucial reason that the Rams are contenders and just won a ring. Matthew Stafford's not throwing. Matt Stafford is under major watch right now because of something called baseball elbow. Stafford said, "It's just soreness. We're working through it. I felt pretty good today. I thought it looked pretty good. Just trying to be smart, make me feel as good as I can going into week one while still getting reps as well." He isn't participating in team drills. And even Sean McVay has had to admit that this is something they've really got to be careful with. When asked what type of injury this is, and basically what's happening is his elbow is just sore. There's no injury to the elbow. It's just sore, and they call it baseball elbow because it usually comes with pitchers who have just thrown a lot of innings. He said, "I don't know if it's a baseball or a football injury. I currently play football. It's on a football player, so I guess it's a football injury. I'm not really too worried about whether it's called baseball or football or whether it's abnormal or not. I'm worried about here today. How do I feel? Let's just continue to progress and get better." When asked specifically about what injury might have led to this, if at all, he said, "I'm not going to get too granular into about how we got to this point. I don't think there's an injury that's the sole cause, but I'm sure anything contributes to it. Anytime you put an arm through as much stress as I have over the years, it's not going to look like a normal elbow. It's not one of those things that the more I throw, the worse it's going to get. It's just kind of a balancing act." Okay, here's the deal. The Rams under Sean McVay have annually let the veterans sit. They're not forcing these guys to play and compete. So it was unlikely that a Matthew Stafford, an Aaron Donald, the veterans that have been there before, were going to have to play anyway. So I don't know if that's a big difference. If Stafford just rests until week one, whether it was just normal veteran rest, we don't want you to get injured, or slight soreness of the elbow that just feels a little twinge or a little weird, then what's the difference as long as you're healthy for week one? Why I think this is significant is, look, you're the starting quarterback of a defending Super Bowl champion. So that in and of itself is pretty big shoes to have to fill no matter what. But also, Matthew Stafford has taken a lot of abuse over the years. And Matthew Stafford has thrown a lot of passes over the years. And Matthew Stafford has had a lot of injuries over the years. And Matthew Stafford's played through a lot of injuries over the years. This is not a guy that's 25 years old. And you know what? A little bit of rest and relaxation, he should be fine. This is not a guy that's never had an injury to any part of his shoulder or his throwing arm or anything. And you can feel like, you know what? There's not a lot of long-term damage there. This is a guy who has played through significant pain for a long time. He's been an Iron Man. He has not missed games due to injury. And he's thrown a ton of passes. Stafford played in all 16 games, didn't miss a game for the Lions between 2011 and 2018. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. 8 consecutive seasons, he did not miss a game. And the last 2 years, he played all 17 last year for the Rams and all 16 the year before for the Lions. The guy goes out there and plays. And so for them to be addressing an elbow issue on a guy who has thrown nearly 7,000 NFL passes and played in nearly 200 NFL games and is 5 yards away from 50,000 yards thrown. Yeah, I think this is a concern. You know, Stafford, at 34 years old, he'll play. This is his season at age 34. He'll be 35 right after the Super Bowl. He's getting up there. And just because we're watching Rodgers do it at that age or Tom Brady do it at that age does not mean your normal quarterback is going to be like that. Those guys are superhuman right now. And yeah, Brees played until he was 40, and now Rodgers is as well, and we know Brady. But 35, when you've thrown a ton of passes, 35, when you've had a lot of injuries over the course of your career, even though he's played through them, he's been banged up. He's played hurt a lot, I think is a significant concern for the Rams. I really do. I think it's a significant concern. Now, again, do I care that he's playing or throwing now? No, I don't. Nope, I don't. I don't think it matters if he plays one snap of the preseason. I trust a guy at 34 years old to go out there and be fine. But do I think that at this age, with his history, the fact that you've got to worry about an injury that is not even a football injury, but it's more of a baseball injury just because of wear and tear on an arm and an elbow, is a concern? Yeah, I sure do. Stafford is currently 12th all-time in passing yards. He's at 49,995. He will pass John Elway sometime this year at 51,500 and be number 11. And then after that, it's Aaron Rodgers, who obviously is still adding to his total. After that is Eli Manning, that he would probably catch next year to be in the top 10. Stafford's got a lot of yards in that arm, a lot of passes on that elbow. And, yeah, I think the Rams, while very talented, could also be poised for a bit of a comeback because, you know, you exhaust yourself getting to a Super Bowl. You exhaust yourself in the postseason. You then win it, and all of those things that come with winning a Super Bowl are in play. And that is book deals and podcasts and television appearances and radio stuff and sponsorship deals and travels and trips, and everybody kind of tries to get a piece. And it's LA. You know, there are certainly trappings of success. Now, maybe less so than other places that in Pittsburgh or Green Bay or Kansas City, you know, those guys are celebrities everywhere that they go. They can't go to the grocery store. They can't go get their tires changed. They can't go anywhere without everybody seeing them, knowing them, wanting a piece of them. So a little different in LA where you can blend in, especially as a team that's relatively new to the market, at least this iteration of it. I think the Rams could be poised for a bit of a pullback this year. But what's most important is that offense, while running the football is very important to them, they need Stafford to pull the trigger, because we've seen them with Jared Goff be good, not great. We saw them with a legitimate quarterback, you know, end up being great. And people forget, because they won the Super Bowl, that the Rams were the 4 seed last year in the NFC. They were the 4 seed. The Packers were the 1, best record, had home field advantage. The Bucks were the 2 seed. Dallas was the 3. And the Rams were the last division winner, or the worst division winner. And they were the 4 seed. Now, they hosted Arizona. They blew the doors off the Cardinals. And then they went on the road and won that crazy game against the Buccaneers. They led that game by a big margin. Buccaneers made that crazy comeback, end up surviving that. Then went to the NFC Championship game and had the benefit of having that at home. Usually a 4 seed doesn't get to host the NFC Championship game, but the 4 seed got to this year because the Niners had knocked off the Packers. You know, that should have been the Rams going to Green Bay had the Packers done their job. And so that broke well for them. They trailed that game until the late comeback, and then they get to host the Super Bowl at SoFi. Now, how many 4 seeds get to host the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl? I'm not saying the Rams were bad. I'm not saying they're not a valid NFL champion, because they are. I'm just saying a lot of things broke their way last year, and a dinged up Stafford starting things off. I really like the Allen Robinson deal. I think, you know, not having Odell is not a huge loss if you have Robinson there, but I do think the Rams, you know, could end up missing the playoffs or be a wild card team in a division where the Niners win the NFC West and be one and done. And that's not a shocker, because they're some type of machine. Whereas, how much concern would you have over the Matthew Stafford elbow injury?
A lot. I think anything arm and shoulder related, elbow related, anything connected to him throwing the football, I think is alarming, because he's also not a young quarterback. He's a quarterback that threw a lot of bullets in Detroit. And, I mean, they went on a long run. His health has always been a little bit of a question. He's already being held out now. Generally, those things to me in training camp are things that, you know, if they're happening now, how do I expect him to get healthier as the season goes along? So I have a lot of concern for it.
We'll see what happens with the NFC West, because the Seahawks are going to be dreck. And the Cardinals think they're good, but we'll see. You know, last year was a really good start to the season, but they completely faded down the stretch. We'll see what Kyler under this new deal looks like. We'll see what the free agent additions look like. We'll see what they look like, minus DeAndre Hopkins early in this season. The Rams are the best team in the division in some ways, but the only question with the Niners is, what's Trey Lance? And if you know what Trey Lance is, which I think he's going to be very good and very dangerous, the Niners are one of the best teams in the NFC. And I don't think they're being properly rated because of the question about Lance, which I understand. But the Rams come back to earth perhaps a little bit, or just, you know, they have the same season they did last year, but they end up losing in the first round or losing the divisional round. I think that opens up the doors for the Niners to be an elite team this year in the NFC, or an NFC where, once again, a couple of teams that made the playoffs miss it, and a couple of teams that missed it make it. Coming up here after the break, Kyle Petty's going to join us here on the show. He's got a new book called Swerve or Die, his life in sports, in motorsports, in racing, in NASCAR. It's coming up here next. Kyle Petty, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Well, I didn't understand the song.
It's DA on CBS Radio.
Happy Monday, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate you, as always, being part of the DA show. Heard across the country at hundreds of affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Also on SiriusXM 158. And you can listen to us on the free Odyssey app as well. Now, our next guest is also available on our simulcast. You can watch our next guest at watchda.com, on YouTube, or on Twitch, all of our video channels as well. He's got a new book out called Swerve or Die, Life at My Speed in the First Family of NASCAR Racing. Joining us this morning on the show, a guy that's been a racing star, a broadcaster, a country music singer, a little bit of everything, Kyle Petty. Kyle, good morning. How you doing?
Doing great, man. Thank you very, very much for having me this morning.
My pleasure. You know, you've lived such an interesting life with so many different layers to it. I'm sure trying to capture it in a book could be really difficult, especially they say if you're writing it yourself, boy, writing a book is really hard. But you got to work with a New York Times best-selling author in doing this as well to just kind of tell your story with Ellis Hennekin. So I'm wondering, was it hard or was it easy? Because there's so much to talk about with your life.
Okay, so here's the deal. So this all started during the pandemic. And I write music. I write a lot of songs, write kids songs, just write songs. So I thought, man, I got to be able to write something more than verse, verse, chorus. So I sat down and I started writing some of my stories. I let my wife, Morgan, read them. And she said, that's pretty decent. And then I ran out of steam. And I'm like, okay, I got to find somebody. So I found Ellis Hennekin. What a godsend. He is an amazing, amazing man. And we put them together. And you know what it was? it was funny. As we would sit and talk, something would pop into my head and we would write it down and we would work through it. And then after I read the book, after we put it all together, I was like, man, I should have put this in. I should have put that in. But part of it was hard. And I will say part of it was the storytelling and going back down some of those roads. Some of them were very easy. Some of them were very hard. The loss of my Uncle Randy when I was 14, he was killed on pit road at Talladega. Adam's accident when he was killed in New Hampshire. Those were hard. And I don't believe, I think I thought I was good with all that until I started peeling away the layers again. And I realized that the hurt was still just right under the surface. So that part of it was hard.
Well, specifically, Adam's passing must just be devastating to go back and reprocess yes. and relive. And was there any part of you that just said, boy, I really would prefer not to do that and we don't need to put that in this book?
No, there was never the moment, because that is it's a life-changing moment for anybody. I think especially for a parent, when you lose a child, it's not the proper order of nature. The grandfathers, the fathers, that part goes first. The children come last. And when the children go first, it makes you question a lot of things. It makes you look at life a lot different. So for me, it was, I thought I had dealt with it. And it took Ellis and I a pretty good while to get through it, because we would talk, we would write, he would send stuff, I would send stuff to him. And it had to feel right and it had to be right. And I had to be as honest as I could. And it was hard. It was hard to be honest, because I know, I look back on it now, after Adam's accident in 2000, there's 7 or 8 years that I was in a dark place and dealt with depression and didn't know it at the time, had no clue that I was dealing with it. But looking back on it, it was a bad place to be. So it was tough to wade back through all those years to what happened to Adam and why it happened and how it happened and to deal with it.
Kyle Petty joins us this morning here on the show. His new book is called Swerve or Die. So for our listeners that may have been in some tough situations before and wonder maybe they're in one now, how do you walk out of it? How do you get out of it? How do you pull yourself out of it? What did you do to walk through that?
You know, I think a couple of things. I think the way, you know, I was very blessed the way I was raised. And it's a weird way. I will say that driving race cars is, I tell people all the time, I say it in the book, I thought everybody's father had a race car until I was 7 or 8 years old. But you know, the way we were brought up and in a racing family was, you race on Sundays. And when the race is over with at 4 or 5 in the afternoon, you can whine about it and you can make excuses and you can complain and you can lament everything that went wrong. But at 12 midnight, it's Monday. It's Monday and it's another week and there's another race 7 days ahead and you've got to look forward. You can't look back. And I think I tried to look forward, but there was not a lot in front of me, not a lot in front of me. I went through a lot personally. And then I met a woman, met Morgan, and we married, and things begin to come. You begin to see light on the other end, and she helped, because I felt like I could be honest with her and be open with her. And then I opened up to friends. And I think once that door's cracked a little bit, but it takes, sometimes I wondered if that door would ever crack, honestly, if it would ever come back open again. And through Morgan, then it did. But it is just, you know, tomorrow's another day. And that's the way I was raised. That's the way I always looked at it. And, you know, a lot of those days were Groundhog Days. They were exactly the same day over and over and over again. But there was always that little bit of hope that something would change.
There are two different ways to look at having a famous family that you're part of and you're kind of following in the footsteps. One is, boy, this is amazing. The life is amazing. The doors open up. The opportunities are there. I'm trained for this type of thing. And then the other is, boy, I resent it because people think I'm only here because of my last name, or the pressure is so great because I'm supposed to live up to this last name. Was there part of both of those feelings for you being a Petty?
No, I don't think there was. And honestly, I can honestly sit here and tell you that, because, again, I say I'm from rural North Carolina, where most of the people I went to school with, their parents either worked in a mill, or they had a chicken farm or a dairy farm, or they raised tobacco. And a lot of those kids that I went to school with became third generation farmers, fourth generation farmers. Their parents were first and second generation farmers and mill workers. So I grew up in a community where you were just expected to follow in your father's footsteps. So I never thought any different about it. At the same time, I knew my father was different. I knew my grandfather was different. When my father was coming along, they didn't call him Richard Petty. They called him Lee's little boy, because Lee Petty had won three championships in 50 races. So he had to come out of that. I think we were always encouraged to just be who we were, to be our own person and not, try to, we wanted to imitate, we wanted to emulate, but we didn't want to copy. I was not a clone. I was not a clone of Lee Petty. I was not a clone of Richard Petty, and Adam was not a clone of any of us. I tell people all the time, and I will tell you this, if you had me on for 5 minutes and then had Adam on for 5 minutes and had my dad on for 5 minutes and then could have my granddad on for 5 minutes, you would scratch your head and say, those four people don't even know each other. That's how different they were. That's how different they were. And it's not that we tried to be, it's that we were allowed to be. We were allowed to be. So the shadow was long. I'm not going to say that it wasn't long, but I knew from the very beginning, it's been 70 some years in this sport and nobody else has come along to be like Richard Petty. Why did I think I could be like Richard Petty? You just had to do the best you could.
Well, do those personality differences, did they lead to clashes between you and between the generations?
I will say yes. I will say yes.
Yeah.
I will say yes. Let me, and for anybody listening, they'll know it is tough to work in a family business.
Oh,
it
boy.
Is tough to work in because you don't leave the business at the business. The business is there Thanksgiving dinner. The business is there Christmas morning. The business is there on birthdays. So yes, there were clashes. I will say that.
Kyle Petty joins us this morning here on the show. I'm so fascinated by the musical part of your mind, because it's so different than driving race cars, you would think. However, sometimes an organized mind that is able to block through music and notes and lyrics and how songs are built actually might transfer well to building cars, racing cars, seeing, you know, the circuit or the road or the raceway the way that it is. For you, do you think that there's any kind of combination of the two that works for seeing both?
Yes, I do. I think there's a pattern. There's a pattern to racing. You know, we talk about it, people think you just go out and run as fast as you can. There's an art to racing, just as there's an art to being a baseball pitcher. There is an art to it. You just don't throw heat every pitch. There's an art to being a pitcher. And I think for us, it's the same way. It's the same way in racing. There's an art to driving a race car, and tracks have an inherent rhythm. A rhythm of getting on the gas, getting on the brakes, floating into the corner, whatever that may be. There's a rhythm you get into, and you hear it with basketball players, tennis players. You hear it with athletes everywhere. That's the zone. That's where you're looking for, to get in that rhythm to where you are one with whatever sport it is. And music's that way. And it's mathematical. And for me, math was my subject, man. So, I fell into math. I fell into music early on. And it's just always been a part of my life. And it's something that, you know, and we talked about earlier about Adam and those dark times. The one thing that you could always go to was the music. You could always pick up that guitar and set it on your lap and play it, and it listened to you. It didn't talk back. It didn't tell you anything. It didn't judge. It was just there for you. And I think that's what music's always been for me.
Really cool. This book is, I think, fantastic because it's about the founding of NASCAR, the roots of NASCAR, and the Petty family through it, but also Kyle's extremely unique path through life and a career in motorsports as well. And as we had mentioned, the tragic passing of his son and how you deal with that. Kyle Petty, it's Swerve or Die, Life at My Speed and the First Family of NASCAR Racing. It's available right now on Amazon. You can get an audiobook as well, get it on Kindle, all the places that you get your books and read your books. Kyle Petty, Swerve or Die. It's available. I guess tomorrow's the date you can actually pick it up, or can you order it today as well for the pre-order?
Oh, man, you can pre-order. That's okay. I'm a book salesman right now, but yes, it drops tomorrow, so you can pick it up at Barnes & Noble, all the places you mentioned. It'll be on the shelves tomorrow.
Amazon.com, pre-order right now, Kyle Petty. Kyle, this was so awesome, man. Thanks so much, and best of luck with the book. Hopefully we can talk again.
Listen, I would love to talk to you. If you ever want to not talk books and just talk racing, I'm your guy.
All right, let's do it. Thanks, Kyle. Kyle Petty joining us this morning here on the show. His son Adam passed away in May of 2000 during a practice lap in New Hampshire. And obviously that stays with you forever when you lose a child. And being part of this racing royalty as a Petty as well, he's just, plus he's a country singer, I mean, that, and a broadcaster. He just does everything, and he's got obviously such an easy way about him to talk about it, to talk through things. So I think it's a really interesting book, and he's just such an interesting guy that it was great to have him on the show this morning. Kyle Petty dropping on by the DA show. Standing by with our headlines this morning is Andrew Bogish, AB.
DA, those headlines are sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Get a renter's insurance to protect the things that make your place a home, including coverage for theft and damage. Visit progressive.com. We begin with breaking news from MLB. The Guardians demoting Mustard to their high A Lake County captains. The yellow condiment has won 0 of the 50 hot dog races this season at the Old Jake. Ketchup and onions have evenly split those 50.
Wow.
The team not mincing words in a press release that hit inboxes last hour, calling Mustard, quote, a tantrum-throwing condiment. They expect him to get his mental and physical game back to MLB caliber in the minors.
Okay, let's ask this question. The Guardians have ketchup, mustard, onions racing every game.
Yep.
And it's 25-25. Zero?
Correct.
Feels like it's rigged.
You think?
It feels like it's rigged.
It does feel a little rigged because
how
I would
could
imagine
it possible that after 52 guys have split it exactly, or men or women, whoever is in those condiments, and then one has zero and then gets demoted? This is a storyline that they wrote. It's WWE at the Guardians game.
Do you think the same person is in the same costume? Like, is it the same mustard guy the whole time, or is a guy racing onion and he pops out in the mustard costume?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it matters if the fix is in. You could have Carl Lewis in there, and if he's supposed to lose, he's going to lose.
No, it does matter. If he really is the slowest and he's always in the mustard costume, then maybe that's why he's getting demoted.
I think the fix is in. I think they're rigging the condiment contest, which is really devastating to me.
And there's only three? Isn't it normally like four in every one? Can we get a relish?
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think the bigger question
is four sausages in Milwaukee and four presidents in Washington.
True.
Cleveland stopped with three condiments?
It's also August 8th, and the Guardians are good enough that maybe they shouldn't be sending out PR emails in the middle of the AL Central race about demoting mustard? That was my first thought.
I push back on this. This is a great buzz for baseball now. You just stopped after a Kyle Petty interview to breaking baseball news. The bit worked. It worked.
I fell for it.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you led with this.
Okay.
I really am. This is a really good DA show sports story, but it's slightly devastating. I would think that integrity-laden condiment races, like when the freeze goes out there to chase down random dude X, I want to know that random dude X isn't taking a dive. And when the condiments go out there, I want to know that onion is trying, or mustard is trying.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, I've been at Yankee Stadium when they do the subway race in September, and it's like 30... to 29 to 28. So it kind of feels like how could it all be neck and neck sticking up for that dramatic ending at the end of the season?
I don't know. This does not sit well with me.
No, and I think if you're really going to like
neither just mustard
extrapolate this out to reality, mustard probably should be third on the list of hot dog condiments out of these three, but not taking a zero. Like ketchup should be the runaway winner, and then you get onions and mustard probably splitting the rest.
Okay, but you're saying just in terms of the value of the condiments, ketchup's always going to be a better condiment than mustard?
Yes.
That I agree with.
Yeah, like
it's not even debated anymore. It's not 1940 where it has to be mustard.
If we're doing 50 races here, ketchup should win 30, and the other 20 can be split somehow by mustard and onions.
Well, a lot of people like only mustard on their hot dogs.
I know, that's a tough crowd.
That crowd is a very strange crowd.
They and they're
very
probably
angry
wrong
about it.
And onions tops mustard, do you think, in the condiment rankings?
Well, it's weird because I wouldn't go, and by the way, I heard him with the minced after, I wouldn't go onions as a condiment first, right? Isn't it relish and kraut first?
Yeah.
But God, where did onions, is that a Cleveland thing?
I love an onion on a hot dog. I really do. A diced onions. But yeah, that's not a not a traditional condiment for hot dogs above sauerkraut or relish.
So you were thinking minced white onions, not the like goopy cooked onions that get on hot dogs sometimes.
Yeah. Well, are they bringing up a condiment from AAA? Did it say that?
You know, that was not mentioned in the release. Let me see if it says.
Well, the reason I say that, because at this point, if it's 50-50, I don't need mustard happen to win a race that's important to the standings. I want to see the two heavyweights go at it the rest of the year.
Interesting. Yeah, I like the chopped white onions because it gives you a little crisp to it. It's a little refreshing, a little crisp. I don't like the saucy red sauce stringy onions. That does nothing for me.
Yeah.
You get them. If you ever go to a soubrette cart, they'll give you a sauerkraut as an option, or I don't know what they call it, onions and sauce or something.
Yeah, sweet onions. I don't know what they call it. But they have it. You can buy that too from soubrettes.
That does nothing for me.
My wife found squirtable onions now for the hot dogs and burgers.
Squirtable.
Yeah, it's like in a thing just like Grey Poupon would look, and it's like a white onion, like
a relish shoe comes like that.
But it's onions.
What pops out?
Like little diced onions in like, I guess, a slight moisture glaze so that it's not just onions being stuck. But yeah, you get the hot dog right there.
Want white onions? Diced white onions?
Diced white onions, yeah. I'll take a picture of it. I'll set it there. Have fun with your onions.
There was actual baseball last night. The Dodgers completing a 3-game sweep of second place San Diego 4-zip. Dave Roberts' team has now won 30 of 35 to open a 15.5 game lead in the NL West.
Group of, as I've ever been around, and I think as a result, you see how we're playing, and then we're winning a lot of baseball games. So it's something I certainly think we can sustain.
Which is bad news for everybody else. The bad news for the Twins yesterday was losing like this.
First pitch popped up, out to left. Beckham underneath it, steps forward to gain momentum. The catch is made. Merrifield's coming down the line. Beckham with the throw on the fly. The play at the plate, and he is out! He's out at the plate!
That's from Blue Jays radio. Whit Merrifield was out until Replay HQ decided that Twins catcher Gary Sanchez was illegally blocking home. Ooh. So Toronto got the run and eventually a 3-2 win in 10 in Minnesota. Twins manager Rocco Baldelli argued the overturn, got tossed, then said this postgame.
One of the worst moments I think we've seen of umpiring in any game I've ever been a part of in baseball.
Oh, boy.
And I think it was pathetic.
Yeah, I'm assuming tomorrow's updates will include his punishment for saying that. If you haven't seen the play, Sanchez is straddling home plate as he catches a great throw from left field, and Whit Merrifield is out, dead to rights out. That play cannot be changed. That play has to be catch, tag, he's out. This is the Buster Posey rule. If any other catcher that night that wasn't an all-star future Hall of Famer got run over, we're not changing rules, we're not creating don't block home plate, and this is the problem. That is a clean, regular play that should never be changed, and it was, and I think Rocco was right for freaking out on the field and for calling it pathetic afterwards.
So you don't like the Buster Posey rule either?
I don't like it in this instance. I mean, he's in the line to make the catch of the throw and make the play. He's not randomly preventing Whit Merrifield from scoring. It is in no way affecting Whit Merrifield from scoring. That's baseball to me.
That's baseball, Susan. He is standing at the plate.
Yeah.
Gets a perfect relay throw.
Yeah.
It's a little high, so he then bends down. The runner is coming in. Merrifield's coming in and tries to slide kind of between his legs.
Yeah.
He gets the tag. He is technically blocking the plate to make the play.
Yeah.
But he's got a job to do as well.
Exactly.
The catcher's got a job to do.
And he's making a play. And the rule says you can be in the way as you're making the play. And he's making the play. If he's there before as the ball's in flight, but Merrifield's 60 feet from home plate. Like, there's nothing should have changed about Whit Merrifield's path home because of Gary Sanchez being there, because Gary Sanchez was there to catch the throw and make the play.
So what did New York's HQ decision maker decide on this?
They decided that they use the word violation because that's what's in the rule book, that he was blocking home plate too soon. And I guess to his credit, Merrifield immediately points to Sanchez as he's called out and says he was blocking me. And I don't know if that helped the cause after the fact, that he immediately said he was in the way. but I've seen it like 18 times now, and I don't understand how him being there at any point affects the play. Merrifield's going to be out, and he's allowed to run through him if he wants to. He's going to be out no matter what. I don't see how that can't be allowed.
So New York, which made this call.
Right, because it's called out on the field. The Blue Jays challenged it, and they overturned it to safe and a run.
Right, and the overturn comes from the league office.
Right.
The league office wants the catcher there to stand off the plate and kind of swing tag.
So in a perfect world, instead of his left foot being across the third base line, theoretically in the path home, he should be completely in fair territory, catch the ball, and then he's allowed to step and drop and block the plate as he did. The problem was he was already there before the ball was in his glove. But you watch it and you can't fathom how that's not legal.
So do they get him on a technicality and Baldelli's just upset that there's a technicality, or
I guess,
is this invalid?
I think he's also, yes, if you boil it down to the simplest of terms, they might have gotten the application correct because he was there, quote unquote, too soon or too early. But I think Baldelli's right in that the play in general should be allowed to happen. And it has, we haven't had this conversation in the longest time. I haven't seen raw numbers yet, but this just doesn't get called really in the last couple of years since we've slowed down from the immediate Buster Posey anger. Just like the play at second base doesn't get called that much anymore, too, that, you know, in terms of takeout slides, we've kind of just slowly walked away from it. So this really came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it feels like this play needs to be legal in baseball.
Has to be.
You have to allow the catcher to sit on home plate and to get a relay throw and make a tag. You can't like force the catcher to be out of position just because technically it's a safer play.
Right. Yeah. It's too much.
Okay.
Very quickly, after Kyle Petty, some racing. Kevin Harvick won the NASCAR Cup Series race at Michigan, his first victory in nearly 2 years. And Scott Dixon won IndyCar's Music City Grand Prix. That's career win number 53, breaking his tie for second all-time with Mario Andretti. Now I'm done, DA.
Our dude Kyle tweets, "My name is Kyle Petty Little, named after Kyle Petty. What a great interview. Have met him many times. Thank you for having him on, DA, and thank you, KP." Very cool. Also, Skipper Tim tweets, "Yeah, of course it's rigged, DA. They are condiments." Well, somebody's got to tell me. Nobody told me when I showed up and threw shekels down in the condiment race at the Jake, which I didn't do, but if I did.
The Jake.
What, Progressive now?
It hasn't been the Jake in 20 years.
AB called it the old Jake in the update.
He named his kid after the stadium. It's different.
That's how much I miss it.
I went to Jacobs Field when it was Jacobs Field.
Back in my day.
Felt real good back then. Named after a family, not an insurance company. When we come back on the show, what is the best moment from Canton's induction weekend? I got it for you next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
DA is like the James Harden of Odyssey. Just does whatever the hell he wants to do.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Wear my fat suit right now. Welcome back, DA, with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Listen to us on the free Odyssey app every single morning, 6 until 10 Eastern Time, 3 until 7 Pacific. Induction weekend over the weekend in Canton, Ohio for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And Bryant Young was an elite defensive lineman for the San Francisco 49ers of the 90s and 2000s. Helped them win a Super Bowl in 1994, was the comeback player of the year, was an All-Pro in 96. Had four Pro Bowl appearances as well, 96, 99, 01, and 02. Was an all-rookie team guy. And is a 49ers Hall of Famer, plus is part of the NFL's all-decade team of the 1990s. And so even though he somewhat played an anonymous position of the defensive line, a defensive tackle, the interior of the defensive line, he was very, very good at what he did, and Bryant Young went into the Hall of Fame this weekend. There were some bigger names. Dick Vermeil got in. Leroy Butler, the originator of the Lambeau Leap, got in. Tony Baselli got in. But Bryant Young, I think, had the most memorable part of the weekend because he used a lot of his speech to talk about his family and his children. And a number of his children were there. His wife was there. But he spoke about one of his children that was not there. And that would be one of his younger sons who passed away after a battle with cancer. Here was Bryant Young.
Kobe showed immense courage. He felt good for months. We really were hopeful. The following October, Kobe said, "Dad, I have a headache. The cancer was back. Doctors tried immunotherapy, but it has spread too far too fast." Kobe sensed where things were heading and had questions. He didn't fear death as much as the process of dying. Would it be painful? Would he be remembered? We assured Kobe we keep his memory alive and continue speaking his name. On October 11, 2016, God called Kobe home. Kobe. You live on in our hearts. We will always speak your name.
That one hit me pretty good over the weekend. You know, I love the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You know me. I love the history of the game. I love when these guys are honored and they finally have their moments after these incredible careers. And Bryant Young is this kind of big, burly defensive tackle that was, you know, traditional tough guy in the NFL. And here he was so eloquently speaking about his family and his son who passed. And you know, there's a part of me that thought about Little Mo and, you know, young people that are dealing with horrific illnesses and don't make it out of them, and the families they leave behind, and how tortured that type of experience is for everybody involved. And I just thought it was such a humanizing moment, such a real moment. There are so many thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people that unfortunately are feeling the effects of cancer in their family or they themselves. And here was Bryant Young, who's going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, saying, "We're not going to forget my son. Yeah, he passed away, what now, 6 years ago. We're not going to forget him. I'm going to speak his name so he's always remembered." And that story doesn't fade. And I thought that was a really powerful, powerful moment. So I wanted to play that for you. When we come back here on the DA Show, we'll do some Sounds of Saturday. Bill Roth's going to join us, the voice of the Virginia Tech Hokies. Let's do some college football next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.